The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So Derrick Henry, he did it again.
Yeah.
195 yards.
He did it again.
So I wanted to play a little game with you.
Played with my heart.
A little would you rather.
Got lost in the game.
Oh, wow, you know it word for
ooh,
word.
Oh, baby.
Do the whole thing. No, we can't. We have to pay for it at that
sorry,
point.
Guys.
Oh, baby. What the hell was I thinking on that one, okay?
You could have done the whole song.
I don't know. I don't think I could have, but I could have got a lot of it, all right? I do. I'm not ashamed to say, but I'm ashamed.
You went farther than I thought you were.
Oh, apparently,
go.
Yes. You kept thinking. You kept trying to talk there, and I kept singing. But what up? It's Super Bowl. Super Bowl.
We're here.
Super Bowl. We made it. Championship Sunday in the books. Good games. One was really fun to watch. Another one was a dominating football game, which was kind of like, it wasn't that great to watch.
Until the end where you're like, well, maybe.
Yeah, right. Rodgers gave us a little chance for a magic, but then they hit that field goal to make it 37-20, and it was night-night. So we're going to hit it all today. We're going to go, you know, damn okay. What the fuck happened? And a requiem for a team because we have two more teams
goodbye.
Who are dead. D-E-D, dead.
Yep. So we say goodbye to the Titans. We say goodbye to the Packers. And I do want to look into them a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because they have some really interesting free agent questions.
Definitely.
They've got some question marks. I mean, even Aaron Rodgers, we think he's going to be there for the next few years.
Right. He made a comment like they're in the window. So,
yeah
we'll hit that up. First thing we do before we talk about Chiefs Titans, all right? We got a little special thing going on next week at the Super Bowl in Miami.
We do?
We do. Not you, though. Not included. You're not invited, okay? We just found this out, but you're not invited.
When you said we, that got me really excited.
Well, maybe you can be part of the special guests, too, okay? So we'll listen up. Live podcast with Chris Sims, Unbutton, and PFT. We're doing a live one, joint collaboration, next Wednesday, all right? That is January 29th from 5 to 7 p.m. It's our first live ever podcast. It's happy hour with Florio and Sims.
Ooh.
I mean, who would you rather spend happy hour with? Do you think you can drink more 1942 tequila than me? I don't know. We'll see.
Definitely.
But I certainly plan on having a few drinks while we do this podcast. And we're doing it at the Playwright Irish Pub in South Beach. So we'd love a full place, packed house. We're going to have fun, take questions from the fans. But it's free to attend, free to drink. I report.
Whoa.
I repeat. I don't report anything. I repeat.
You do both.
It's free to attend and free drinks on Florio.
Wow.
One free drink per.
Pete's making sure we
have. And Florio's paying it. It says Florio and Sims, but we'll put it on Florio.
One free drink.
But we're going to do our picks in the game, Super Bowl props, questions from the fans, and you can claim a ticket on Eventbrite. The link will be posted on Twitter, and follow at Pro Football Talk or me at CSimsQB on Twitter, and we'll get all the information, the link there that you can sign up, and hopefully you have a good crowd. But it'll be fun.
Really cool.
We're going to make it fun. I know me and Mike are both going to drink while we do it.
Wow.
Sorry you're not invited. We do have special guests, though.
Maybe
I can't tell you
me.
Who they are
maybe
yet.
Maybe one's me.
Maybe one's you. No. Then it should just say guest to take out
true.
The special.
You do know. So are these, we're talking some high-profile people?
I know we got a list of people we are reaching out to. I don't know who is confirmed yet. So either way, the list of people we're reaching out to, It's a win-win. It's not going to be bad. I know that.
This will also be the first time that I've ever seen Mike Florio amongst people. I don't know that I've ever seen that before.
Yeah.
Like, well, out with, like, you know, us regular
people. Well, and then I'll get him flustered and get on him with people in the crowd, and you watch him get all defensive and angry. It'll be great. It'll be great. It'll be worth the price of admission. It's certainly worth a free drink on Florio, so check that out.
Cool.
All right, let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's get into the game. So we had two good ones. Like you said, one game was close, and it was almost – like a repeat performance from the Chiefs and Titans. Let's get to that one first. We'll talk about 49ers. That was really dominant. And what I do think here is that I was looking at the season. I was like, I think there were three really dominant teams this year in the NFL. I think the 49ers were dominant.
Yeah.
I think Baltimore was dominant.
Right.
I think the Chiefs, for the most part of the year, they had that stretch where they didn't have Patrick Mahomes that you really can't hold against him.
Right.
I think they were dominant. So I think there were three dominant teams in the NFL.
Yeah.
And we got two of them in the Super Bowl.
That's right. We
got
two
of them. Good.
I would argue that maybe the Saints were dominant too for the regular season, right? But you know, they whatever. They blew it in the wild card game. But I'm with you. And I will state that before the playoffs started, I said it was gonna be 49ers Chiefs, just saying it.
You
just
did.
I did. Pat me on the back.
You said you hoped it was and you thought it would be.
It would be.
It did.
The You're right. So I had a double whammy. But I think we are insured of a good matchup in this football game.
Yes.
You know, with the Titans and Chiefs, you're right. I mean, you could argue that both were certainly the best teams in their conference. If you didn't think the Chiefs were, you certainly thought that they were the second best team in the AFC behind the Ravens. And we knew they matched up well with the Ravens as well, mm-hmm. having beat them twice the last 2 years. Game's interesting. I mean, first off,
they fell behind again.
Right? And you're just thinking, like, okay, I mean, the sun comes up the east, and when Derrick Henry carries the ball, they run for 100 yards. It looked like that early on, right?
It did.
Now, I think here's the thing that's interesting to me, and I'll try to give a quick synopsis of the game.
Sure.
You know, first two drives of the game, great job by the Chiefs, hold them to a field goal on the first drive. Chris Jones gets a huge pressure on third down. Hey, Chiefs go three and out. Titans go right back down. The theme of it early on was not necessarily the run game just gashing the Chiefs. It was more play action pass and just the Titans executing. I wasn't sitting there going, oh my gosh, the Chiefs are getting blown off the ball. They're in deep trouble. Not the first two drives. Then becomes the biggest drive of the year for the Chiefs. They come back, make it 10-7. Now, to me, this is where the game, I got scared for the first time. It was 10-7, mm-hmm. Titans. And then this next drive, to where the Titans make it 17-7, that was, to me, the most physically dominant drive of the day to that point. And if anybody went back and watched that drive, that third scoring drive, the one that got them to 17, that was a little bit of like, I went, uh-oh. Man, the Chiefs got pushed around a lot on that drive. All right? Now, what happens from there? They score 17-7.
Mm-hmm. It was a 15-play, 74-yard drive.
For 9 minutes, right?
Yeah.
9 minutes, 7 seconds?
Yep, 9 minutes, 7 seconds.
Right. You're and you're just sitting there going, oh, no, this is not good.
If they
good.
Do that two more times, the game's
over. The Chiefs
over.
Are in trouble. Yeah. Right. You're going, it doesn't look like they're going to stop them. And that was the best drive of the day. All right, well, the Chiefs answer the bell. They make it 17-14. Mm-hmm. And then this is where the game changed to me, right here. 17-14, Chris Jones, for the first time all game, plays on first and second down. All right? So causes a little havoc. On the next drive, Chiefs are down 17-14. But here was the other thing that jumped out to me a lot here. And this is where it changed, where the people asked me, like, well, what did the Chiefs do on defense that was different? Okay, one thing is I think they started playing downhill, where the linebackers were with this outside zone scheme, right? They're worried about, like, oh, I need to shuffle along and stay in my gap and stay in my gap and stay in my gap as he goes offside. I'm supposed to be in between the guard and the tackle. Let me keep moving. Hmm. Well, when it got to 17-14, and I'm sure Steve Spagnuolo said something on, hey, when you see a gap and it's open, stop shuffling to it. Go run through it because the running back's going to run through there. Don't let Derrick Henry build up the steam, right? Because he's kind of a long strider that way. And that, to me, was the difference right there. So Chris Jones gets off some blocks, causes some disruption, but I think the linebackers started playing like running backs, what we would say, where they just said, oh, there's a hole. I'm going to go run through it and meet Derrick Henry before he can get the full steam and hit me and then fall forward for 5 yards.
Yeah.
So that was a huge part of the game to
meeting
me.
Him at the point of attack.
Right.
And on that drive that you're talking about, Henry had 2 carries, 1 yard, 0 yards. Jones met him both times on that. And so that's kind of the game plan for stopping Derrick Henry is don't let him start.
Yeah, don't let him start. And I think that's what carried over. So then we get to the next drive, and we'll hit more about this in a minute. Mahomes, of course, scores the touchdown, right? The great scramble. A 26, 28-yard scramble?
27-yard
scramble, right? Which is amazing, and we're going to break that down in a minute. But That, again, so now they go into halftime. Chiefs get the ball back. Titans get the ball. Chiefs go get a few first downs, got to punt the ball. Titans get the ball. They get a first down. They have first and five, okay? And they don't convert a first down. They get first and five, and this is where Mike Pennell, the linebacker, is playing downhill, and it's like Titans' domination of the run game stopped from that point on. From Chris Jones making a few plays at 17-14 to then the Titans being off the field for a very, very long time and then coming back and trying to reignite that magic and then being stopped on third and one while also lining up in an illegal formation, which made it third and 11, and that was when Ryan Tannehill scrambled down the right sideline and got crushed, like tried to run over a guy, and he ended up getting run over.
Yeah.
But the game was never the same. And then the Chiefs go down, get a score, make it 28-17, and it's night-night. And once they get rolling like that, and like you see them roll for the second week in a row, you pity the fool that's got to deal with them.
That was the question. Can they slow down Derrick Henry? And it didn't look like they could. And I went back to the game logs just to – because this run for Derrick Henry, we know, the three games in a row with 180 yards.
Right.
Okay, it's been a really good recent run.
Yeah.
But this goes all the way back to week 10 for Derrick Henry. So a lot of teams have been trying to figure this out on how to do it, how to execute it. Teams with better defenses than the Chiefs.
Definitely.
Week 10, he had 188 yards.
Yeah.
Then 159. Then 149. Then 103. I mean, this is – he is rolling over teams. He had 86 versus Houston.
And then 90-something against the Saints, right?
He sat week 16.
Oh, that's...
He went 211 versus Houston again.
Right, right.
Now he's in the playoffs, 182, 195. And then the Chiefs hold him to 69. And five carries, 12 yards between the tackles, too. And so, like you're talking about, meeting him at the point of attack.
Yes.
Figuring out a game plan on how to slow down the running attack. And now they got to do it against a 49ers team that does it a little differently.
To do it differently, more creatively, more versatility, yes. But you're right. I mean, hey, nonetheless, we got to give the Chiefs a lot of credit.
Yes.
They got better as a run defense the last half of the season. And it's something I know I said on this podcast and I said on PFT a million times. I like what I'm seeing from this Chiefs defense. And, you know, again, I picked the Chiefs to win the game because I thought between the emotions of the game, the depth, the size they have up front, I think they can pose some problems.
They got more aggressive. And you said
more aggressive. I think that's the big thing.
In the passing game,
yes.
In the blitz packages.
Right.
But here, even in this game, more aggressive in stopping Derrick Henry.
Definitely. Played downhill. That was the biggest thing altogether. You know, Frank Clark, Honey Badger, Breshad Breeland, they changed this defensive team around with Mike Pennell, the defensive tackle who made a few plays. But there's depth, there's size, there's versatility and scheme. The Chiefs defense is for real. They're going to pose some problems. Now, let's get back to the major player here in this game, okay? Because he's the best player in the game right now.
You want to talk about your Mahomie?
You know it. Because he's unstoppable. He's in a groove like I haven't seen since Rodgers in the early 2010, 11, 12, where he's almost indefensible at this point.
Able to extend plays.
Right.
Able to, even though he's not the fastest guy in the world, he's got enough speed and creative playmaking ability.
Keep going, right.
Keep waxing poetically.
Go on.
Throw off his back foot and throw it 50, 60 yards downfield.
Right.
That sounds like Aaron Rodgers. You're right.
Oh, it is prime. It's what we're seeing, too. And he's using somewhat of the same formula, too. That's what I look at and just go, ooh, this is scary. First off, like Mahomes' ability to read and recognize and then appropriately take the right action since the playoffs have started, really, and since the last few games of the regular season, it's gone to another level, okay? You almost are just fucked no matter what defense you play at this point. Sorry for the bad language.
Well, it's your podcast.
Yeah. Okay, good. Apologize. But you play zone, all right? He's going to float around back there and manipulate the zone until somebody comes open, and then he's going to make a throw. Yep. You play man. He looks at the first guy, and then if an opportunity presents itself to run the football, he knows, oh, it's man. Everybody's chasing my receivers deep down the field. Maybe they have a spy on me. Oh, that's right. They did have a spy on him on that 27-yard touchdown run. Didn't matter. He gave him the old okey-doke head fake and turned the corner on him. But he just got a great feel of what defenses are trying to do to attack him right now, which is really, really special. And, you know, it came into play. Like, you know, we talked about this last week. Every team has their kryptonite. The Titans, they found their kryptonite. And that's why I picked the Chiefs to win the game.
A lot of teams' kryptonite is Patrick Mahomes.
Well, it's certainly. Certainly. There's no doubt. You're right about that. I mean, that's a fair statement. But it went more into Patrick Mahomes, the weapons they have.
Yeah.
The Titans are one of the bottom seven or eight teams in pass defense all year. And then the Titans can't rush the passer with four. They can't get to the quarterback. And how? I mean, you saw the game yesterday. I mean, Mahomes had a lot of time. Never had people around him a whole lot. When he did have people around him, it was really because he didn't like what he saw downfield, and then he started to move around and tried to manipulate the pocket that way. And all those little weaknesses from the Titans, they finally met a team who said, oh, you have weaknesses there? Oh, those are some of our greatest strengths, and we're going to expose it. And that's what you saw, the accumulation of that, and ended up kind of being a butt-whooping on the scoreboard.
So that 27-yard touchdown was such a huge play in the game. Let's hear from Patrick Mahomes, because Peter King actually caught up with him on the Peter King podcast. Here's Mahomes on that amazing rushing touchdown.
On your run today, the 27-yard run, you told me that it might have been the longest run you've had since high school. Take me through it and what caused you to be able to make it.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was it was kind of like a two-man or 11 double where they're kind of in that version where they're really focusing on our receivers with Tyreek and Kelce. And so as I started working, I knew we had kind of an all-go type of route where everybody's down the field except for Kelce. And I saw the offensive line shove everybody down. And so I knew I could run to the sideline and get the first down. And I luckily got down that sideline and just kind of kept my feet. And then I knew we had a timeout. So I tried to cut it back and got in the end zone.
Did you know how close you were to the sidelines?
I didn't know how close I was, but I knew I was.
It was about 3 inches.
I knew I was very close. I was just trying to keep my feet up.
That is great. And that is part of the Peter King podcast. You can listen to that wherever you listen to this podcast and all the other podcasts, because he gets really good guests like Patrick Mahomes talking about a crucial key play in the game. He said, I don't think I've run that far for a touchdown ever before. The distance from line of scrimmage to the end zone was 27 yards. The distance that he ran was 64 yards in total. It was the most yards on a touchdown by a quarterback this season.
I believe it.
Scrambling all over, rolling, doing spin moves, changing where he was holding the ball from one arm to the other. If you're listening and can't watch or don't remember the play, here's the Titans who had a shot at him. Derek Roberson, we got Rashawn Evans, Daquan Jones. If he had a better angle, he would have been there. Tremaine Brock had one. Amani Hooker.
Amani Hooker is the one that should have made the tackle and kind of just threw his shoulder out at him.
Yeah, I don't know what someone was trying to strip the ball there right before
that was
the
that was Brock. Was that Brock? Yeah, that was Tremaine Brock. Yeah,
they all had a chance to bring him down, and they couldn't do it. And so when you see that play, Chris, and break it down, what are the key points?
Well, the key points, again, go back to something we just talked about. Mahomes is on another level right now with, like, recognizing how a defense is playing him. And on this play, they went to a bread and butter, like Mahomes just explained to Peter King, an all-go special type of play. It's a play they run a lot. We've diagrammed it. We've showed it.
Yeah.
It's three verticals from the left, and then Travis Kelce running a crosser from the right coming underneath all those verticals. But what Mahomes notices is they're doubling both Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce here, okay? And along with that, it's a three-man rush with a spy, okay? The first rounder from Alabama, Rashad Evans, is the spy. And if you can rewind that one more time, because if you're checking this out on the YouTube / NBC
Sports, we got the dots
and a diagram here, and it's worth seeing. So Mahomes buys time. Okay, now they're playing man-to-man, as we talked about. This is dangerous against Mahomes. They're rushing three, so he's going to have time. Tennessee did nothing to control the rushing lanes when they pass rushed. They just went after the quarterback, which is kind of suspect to me in general. But then he notices, whoa, two people are following Tyreek Hill. Two people are following Travis Kelce. He gets the ball. He kind of moves around a little. He sees a gap to his left because the left tackle pushes the defense end way upfield. And as he's running, he sees Rashawn Evans chasing him. Yeah. He kind of gives him the slowdown, turns his head to the right, okey-doke type play.
At this point right here, there's two linebackers who no one is blocking them. One of them should have made the tackle.
But this is, and again, keep it paused here again. Look at the distance where this is where their offense and their talent pressures you. Because, okay, Mahomes will sit back there, and we know he could throw in the run or sit on the pocket or throw off his back foot 50 yards. So now you're going, well, I got to stay down the field with him. Look, there's two guys doubling Tyreek Hill in the middle of the end zone up there by the F and Chiefs, right? Because they're like, well, Mahomes can throw this easily. We never know where it's going to come. So you're worried about that. But now there's all this space underneath where, yeah, if that linebacker or the other linebacker don't make the tackle, this guy's a pretty athletic guy, and he turns it up the sideline. And as you go, you start to see, well, he fakes out Rashawn Evans. Now guys are trying to rally to make the tackle who were just playing man-to-man coverage. And that's where Amani Hooker throws out the shoulder. And Brock Sr., as you mentioned, is trying to strip the ball. And Mahomes makes the cut because he knows the timeout's there. And they kind of, like, because they're stripping the ball, he can kind of keep his balance and fall into the end zone. And I mean, that's just – that's them. They're amazing. He's amazing. He's playing at such a high level right now. He literally can beat anybody, with the way that, especially with their scheme and the talent they have around them.
They do that because they have so many playmakers. And Andy Reid does such a good job of getting the ball at the right times. I mean, the first touchdown was the 8-yard shovel pass to Tyreek Hill, which was good play design. And if you look back on that one, Travis Kelce's getting a couple of blocks, chipping. And there weren't great blocks even, but it's like these play designs and the speed and the playmakers that they have makes everything difficult.
100%.
Even if they're not executed 100%, because you wouldn't draw that 27 run for a yard run for Patrick Mahomes up like that.
No, that was the perfect defense, really.
Yeah.
It was perfectly called. Oh, we have a spy with our first-round linebacker there to make the tackle on the guy. We got all their key players covered. We got their two best receivers doubled. Okay, what are they going to do? Oh, that's right. Shit, I forgot. This guy's like one of the greatest we've ever seen already, and he can just make a play like you're talking about. And he's amazing that way. He just – the big thing to me, you know, when Sammy Watkins is healthy, they are tough to stop because Sammy. who do you guard? You know, it's a little bit like our Will Fuller thing with the Houston Texans.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs have all, you know, Kelce, Hill, and Watkins. It's just, what do? Who do you stop? Let alone you're also worried about a plan to stop Mahomes and him extending plays. So there's a lot to worry about. And then to your point, with the creativity and the aggressiveness of Andy Reid, he makes you defend every square inch of the field, and that's where they're dangerous. And then, of course, his ability to make plays off of that is second to none in the league at this point. And he's, you know, their money is performing to them. Anybody who's listened to me and on podcasts, like, hey, if you're looking at a team that you think is good, the first thing you need to look at is the money performing? Are their assets performing? And we saw a team that's, yeah, their assets are on the offensive side of the ball, and they've answered every clutch bell or question they've had to answer so far in the playoffs.
So you mentioned a player that I want to give a damn okay to.
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's do it. Here's a song.
Damn. I'm okay. Damn. I'm okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, yes.
I'm okay.
The legal gambolizing.
Oh, baby. I am Chris Sims. I'm okay. Damn. Okay.
Damn okay to a player you mentioned, wide receiver of the Kansas City Chiefs, Sammy Watkins.
Sammy Watkins.
60-yard touchdown pass in the fourth quarter. I was looking back at that one. Logan Ryan was free in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
Thought Mahomes was in trouble with the rush, so started to look at the shorter routes. Like, okay, he's not going to throw deep now because he's a little bit in trouble with the rush. He's on the move. He's running.
Right.
And then what does Mahomes do? Rolls right, throws it 50 yards in the air.
Yep.
Over Ryan to Sammy Watkins, who catches it in stride and scores. So Watkins is an interesting case this year, right?
He is,
because
yeah.
First game of the year, he scores those three touchdowns.
Right.
And everyone that I know that plays fantasy football said, oh, my gosh, I have Sammy Watkins. I didn't play him, but he's going to be great for me this year. He wasn't that great. He's very inconsistent, but he is a weapon. And what kind of a weapon do they have, and how much will they utilize him? Because they do have a lot of weapons, but Sammy Watkins can be one when he's utilized.
And when he's healthy and everything, you know, he battles injuries always. That's been another issue for him. There's always a foot issue, an ankle issue, whatever it may be. So that hurts his production and you know, hurts his place within the offense too. But he's still a special talent, and he's still a guy, you know, just on the play you mentioned, and some other plays too, where if you play man-to-man, you're rolling the dice on him because he's got the strength and the straight speed to beat you and make plays that way. And with the way Mahomes is seeing the field, and I think he notices that teams are showing a lot of attention to Tyreek and Kelce, he wasn't afraid to go to him. And on that play too, you know, that's another play where, you know, okay, Brock and Sammy Watkins are locked up. Brock falls down, right? They call the pass interference or defensive holding on Brock. Logan Ryan really is replacing the safety Byard, who's going to cover Tyreek Hill in a shallow cross. So he's not thinking he needs to worry about getting deep. And, Mahomes makes a play, and that's all there is to it.
That's an interesting wrinkle to that play. Just got so many playmakers. The three touchdowns for Mahomes, the one rushing. And then on the defensive side, like you mentioned, the Chiefs have taken big steps. And there was Daniel Sorensen again making big plays. He was the guy that made it two big plays in special teams the week before. Talk about making a name for yourself when it's the biggest. So it's just a dominant team with a dominant performance that's shown 2 weeks in a row that there is no deficit that they're not skilled enough to come back from.
I think that's very fair. And their defense, other than a few missed assignments in week, you know, in the divisional game against the Houston Texans, and then really a handful of plays where they're going to look at the game from yesterday and go, okay, we could have been better there. Yeah, we got pushed around a little. But for the most part, once they settled in, started to control the football game as well, you know, they got it all. You know, they really do. They got depth, size, creativity on the back end. They're different than years past in the secondary, too, because when they want to play man-to-man, they can do it. Where, like, years past, it was like, oh, they're playing man-to-man, they're screwed. They're going to watch out. Here comes a big play. So they're a complete football team who's playing their best football in the most important time of the year.
Titans, there are questions for them in the offseason. We'll save that for a little bit later in our podcast.
Let's go to game two.
Game number two. Talk about dominant.
Yeah.
49ers, right. 37-20 winners over the Packers. It was 27-0 at halftime. They threw the ball eight times. Jimmy Garoppolo was 6 of 8. He did have a quarterback rating of 104. So very impressive quarterback
Very impressive,
rating.
Right.
For 77
He's
yards.
He's 1-0 versus Aaron Rodgers in the playoffs.
Jimmy G threw one pass more than 10 yards down the field.
Yeah.
Just one. We're talking 10
right,
yards
Right, on the first
the
drive,
field.
He threw it to Debo Samuel, I believe, on an in-cut for like maybe 15
Only pass.
Yards in the air. Right.
Didn't throw a pass the entire third quarter, and they didn't need to. And you've talked about it many times in this podcast, the run design that Kyle Shanahan has employed with this team is just creative. It is misdirection, and it is with any running back at any time. We've seen Matt Breida go off. We've seen Tevin Coleman, who went off in this game with a shoulder injury. He's gone off just last week, and then here it was 220 yards, four touchdowns for Raheem Mostert. I think that's the headline of the game, is that this is a running attack that playoff-wise, playoff football-wise, one of the best footballs ever seen.
No, one of the best. You're right. It is. I mean, whether it's the physicality up front, there were creativity by Shanahan, you know, the versatility in the run game. You know, a lot of the times you see a team who's really good at running the ball, you go, ooh, you know, they're good at pulling guards, or ooh, they're a good zone blocking team. Not with Shanahan and the 49ers. You can't peg them for one or the other. They got answers for any defense you run. They have the right scheme to run it, and they're well coached, and they're talented, and that's why they dominate the line of scrimmage. I mean, they dominated the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. I mean, that's where it starts. And then, hey, we've talked about it again. You know, kryptonite. The things that we worried about with the Packers all year all showed up in the biggest moment, because they played the team that was able to expose that. And, you know, what did we talk about all year with the Packers defense? Not big enough in the middle of their defense.
Yeah.
Not deep enough either. So they're compromised because they know that, and they go, oh, we're outmatched. So they're trying to play the bare front and crowd people in the middle of the defense. Let's try to stop the Shanahan run game. Shanahan was like, okay, fine. If you want to put all those guys in between the tackles, that's great. I'll just have a few guys blocked down, and we'll mash you all in there, and we'll throw toss sweeps and get on the edge and do things like that all game long.
It's curious they didn't stack the box, though. I was looking at those numbers. I try to keep an eye on those. So eight or more in the box when Raheem Mostert was on the field. 14% of the time.
Ooh.
That's not a high percentage. I mean, Derrick Henry, in that game, the Chiefs stacked the box 37% of the time against him.
Right.
You figure that for a team that throws the ball eight times in a game, you're going to see more heavy fronts, eight-man fronts.
Well,
they just
did
not do that.
No, they didn't get, like, safeties deep down in there because they're worried about the play-action game. But what they did do was basically play five across the line for a lot of plays. Like I said, they wanted to cover the two guards, the nose tackle.
Yeah.
They had the two Smith guys on the edge. So you got five there. Then, a lot of the times it was either one or two middle linebackers in there that would only give them seven. You're right about that. But it just didn't matter. One, they physically can't hold up to the San Francisco 49ers running attack. And then two, they just don't, because of that, they don't have enough answers to stop the other thing Shanahan does in the running game. And Shanahan's just brilliant. I mean, we need to really just, let's go to it. The diagram of the first touchdown.
Of Raheem Mostert?
Yes.
Can we take a look at his career journey before we, the diagram. Oh, there's the diagram. We'll do the diagram here first. And then because his story is, you might have already been familiar with it because people have been talking about it the last 8 hours now. But here's the diagram. This is of the, which one is this?
This is the 30, touchdown to put them up 7-0 on 3rd and 8.
36-yard touchdown on 3rd and 8. You got a pulling guard. You got George Kittle taking out a corner just by running an out route on this play.
It's a lot of things, right? I mean, it's man-to-man. There's a bunch to the right, as you see in the diagram. Okay, let's start it from the top here so we can talk it through a little bit. But once again, like Shanahan, it's 3rd and 8. Who's expecting an inside run guard trap type of play? Nobody. But because he's so creative and he's fearless and he has a feel for what they're going to line up in. So he goes, oh, I know what they're going to do here. And on this play, it was five across, but they're in like a nickel defense. Za'Darius Smith is underneath over the center, basically, because he's blitzing. They think in his third and eight, we want to get a mismatch. We want to get our best pass rusher on the center, right, to get some pressure on Jimmy Garoppolo. Well, Shanahan was ready for that. And the brilliance of the play is he has the right guard, okay, come out and block Kyle Fackrell, who's over Joe Staley. And they're so well coached that Joe Staley knows, oh, wait, this guy's coming. He lets him go. So basically Kyle Fackrell is allowed to just go in the backfield because they know the guard's coming to knock him out. Now, outside of Fackrell, if you'll see on there, Preston Smith's outside of him. They don't even block him because they know he's so far outside that the guard who pulls and hits Fackrell is also going to get the way of Preston Smith, who's going upfield thinking pass rush too, right?
Yep.
So one guy blocks two. Yep. And now Joe Staley, who I said just gave the okey-doke to Kyle Fackrell, he's up on the second level just waiting for the linebacker to come, and he cuts him off. And then there's Raheem Mostert, and there's nobody there to even touch him because of the play call and the perfection in which it was coached. Raheem Mostert does not get touched on a 30-something yard touchdown in the NFC Championship game.
The only guy who maybe had a chance there late was the corner, like I mentioned, Chandon Sullivan.
Yeah, right.
But he was so preoccupied with George Kittle running an out route, he didn't even have his eyes in the backfield.
That's what happens in man-to-man, right.
Mostert runs for 36 yards there, which was the fastest run by any ball carrier this week in the NFL.
Is that right?
Faster than Tyreek from Kansas City. It was 21.9 miles an hour. It was actually half a mile per hour faster than Tyreek on that 8-yard touchdown run. So, I mean, it's not a mystery why Mostert has shown up like this, because he's working with a great coach with a good offensive line,
right,
good play design, and he's also really fast. But we haven't seen it before. I think I mentioned that his career journey has been cut by several teams: Eagles, Dolphins, Ravens, Jets, Browns, Bears, and now he's with the 49ers. He said the one that puzzled him the most was when he was cut by the Jets, and they didn't even give him a reason why.
I thought he was on the Colts at one time too, if I remember right, but maybe I'm wrong.
Practice squad.
Maybe it was. Maybe it was just a practice squad. Either way, yes, he's a guy that has popped to me through the years.
He's always had speed, obviously.
Yeah, and I've had on prior podcasts been like, man, this Mozart guy's interesting. You know, a few different times, but yeah, never stuck. Get stuck in the politics of football. But just like we see with a lot of people, Minkah Fitzpatrick to the Steelers, he's a bust with one team and then goes to the other team and he's an all-pro safety.
Yeah.
Well, he got with the right scheme, like you just talked about, and the right coach who had a scheme that is, what do I want to say, that accentuates his running style. And Shanahan, we've talked about this. This is why the 49ers are so talented right now. One, they got size, they got physicality, but Shanahan has an eye for guys who have no hesitation in their game. And I mean that with linebackers where they see a hole, they just run through it. They're like Bobby Boucher. Yeah. What? And hit them. They don't care. There's no like, oh, wait, this guy's really big. Let me like figure out how I want to tackle him. He wants guys that just go. Like, screw you, I'm running through the wall. And that's the same thing for his running backs. He wants to run his schemes, and he goes, I'm going to design something, and when you see that hole, I want you to hit that hole and run like a bat out of hell, and I don't care who's there. And you might get hit like a Mack truck, but that's, hey, we're giving you a hole. You got to make something happen. And he just got the great, the great eye for that kind of talent at the running back position, and Mozart's taking advantage of it.
He's finally taking advantage. He's had that winding career. And then when you take a look at the Wikipedia page, this is a Wikipedia page of Green Bay.
Yep.
You notice the government listed there on this for our YouTube audience. The king of Green Bay is now Raheem Mostert.
Is that right?
So, yeah.
Wow, he's been anointed, huh?
He's been anointed king, and it actually is true because everything on Wikipedia I have found is very true.
Oh, very true, yeah.
You know, people say that all the time. They go, oh, you can't believe everything on Wikipedia. Wikipedia knows a lot.
It does know a lot.
Maybe not the king of Green Bay right now.
Yeah.
That might be inaccurate. That's probably been changed by now.
Kind of inaccurate, but somebody did that.
It's cool to see what he's done. I mean, he had that 22-yard touchdown run in the third quarter, and I was looking at that one, and that was another five-man front with the two running back,
exactly,
linebackers running up.
Right.
Joe Staley locked up Fackrell there. Mostert got outside, if you remember, on that play.
Yes.
Good block downfield by Deebo Samuel. And another part of that play, too, in this whole running scheme, it's like Kyle Juszczyk.
Yeah.
Right? The corner, it was Will Redmond.
Right.
Was reading Kyle Juszczyk, and Kyle went inside.
Right.
And so Will Redmond goes inside.
Which I think he's supposed to. I do think he's supposed to. I think Kyle Fackrell, the guy, the linebacker on the edge, shouldn't let anybody
keep contained.
He's supposed to keep contained, but he saw Juszczyk go inside too, and I think he thought, ooh, the run's going to go in there,
yeah.
And he committed a little, and then he got sealed off, and Mozart jumped outside and, of course, turned the corner for a touchdown.
So it's just a dynamic running attack for this 49ers offense, and they don't need the passing attack, but they do have other playmakers, and I think Deebo Samuel, I've mentioned a couple times here, he had two catches for 46 yards, two rushes for 43 yards. He's not a he doesn't have the speed of a Tyreek Hill, but I feel like they're very similar, and they can be used in the pass game and the running game.
Definitely,
and they're just speed options that are weapons for really creative offensive minds.
Yeah, and it's like when they have the ball in their hand, they just look like they don't lose speed, right? Yeah. I mean, usually guys with the ball in their hand lose speed, and Samuel and Hill look like they get faster. And I think to your point with the comparison with Hill too, it's the acceleration that jumps off. It's just like, oh, they give the ball to Deebo Samuel on a speed sweep or a toss reverse or whatever it may be. And he's at full speed within two steps. So it's like, right. Oh, he got the ball. And then it's like, whoa, he's at the second level already. And, you know, he runs with no fear. He runs like a running back. He runs like just what we talked about with Kyle Shanahan once. So therefore, then, like, safeties and corners are like, ooh, man, he's a load to deal with. And he breaks arm tackles and does everything like that. But the creativity, the versatility in the 49ers run game, the talent they have up front and at the running back position, that's the difference. And they played a team that just can't stack up there. The Packers, this offseason, they got to get bigger up front. That is something they got to do. They're just got to get bigger and get deeper. Ahmed, there was points in the game where the Packers are getting run on, but because they're not deep on the defensive line, they're playing nickel and dime to give their defensive tackles a rest. So they're actually getting smaller as they're getting pounded into the ground because they don't have enough guys to rotate in like a Kansas City or a San Francisco. And kudos to Kyle Shanahan for not letting them off the hook with it. You know, I think he saw it and he just like, you know, fuck the pass. We're gashing them in the run. And we're going to wear them out. And they don't have enough depth. And they're not super talented inside anyways. So let's keep it going. It's the strength of our football team. And he just kind of never let them off the hook in that part of that aspect of the game. And of course, they dominated it.
They threw to George Kittle one time.
Yeah.
One catch, 19 yards. They didn't need to use him.
No.
And that might have been part of the game plan, too, not to go to Kittle much. But they didn't have to.
They were never forced to. You know, and that's one thing that's going to be interesting about – you know, the 49ers, when they get forced to do that, is there enough there in their passing game? Can the Kansas City team, can the Chiefs be that team that go, okay, we can stalemate you a little in the run game. Now, do you have enough in the pass game to beat us, Jimmy Garoppolo and company? That'll be the big question in the Super Bowl, you know? And then you flip it around, and the Packers defense, you know, they want to play like the Titans do. They want to run the ball and control the ball that way, and then that opens up some play-action passes for Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
Okay, but none of that happened. They couldn't really get in the flow of the game, you know.
He finished with 326 yards,
yeah.
Rodgers, a game late.
Yeah.
Right? Obviously past halftime,
right.
They didn't have any points at halftime. Couple touchdowns, did throw two interceptions. He had three fumbles.
Yes.
Just lost one of them.
Right.
Two of them were recovered by his offensive lineman, Billy Turner, which I always think is a bad thing for a lineman. You never want to be the guy recovering the football.
Yeah, because he was the guy that got beat.
Absolutely.
And now he's watching and he's going, oh, wait, my guy's hitting him. I better be ready for the ball coming
out.
Good on you
that you got the recovery.
No doubt.
You should have just blocked the dude to begin with. But you were not impressed. I mean, it was good late, but at that point the game was pretty much
over.
In the
game. Right. You know, it was the competitive part of the football game had already been determined. The 49ers are going to win the game. Yeah, I mean, you're right. We got a little glimmer of like 34-20. Oh my gosh, can they make a stop?
Yeah.
And then maybe he can go down and score and they kick an onside kick and something crazy happened. Maybe, but it was like, man, everything was a lot of work. And, you know, Green Bay, I think ultimately, you know, without being able to run the ball, they're like Tennessee. They run out of options in the pass game. They don't do enough in the pass game. And they don't have enough talent in the pass game to scare you. There was never a moment where early in the game where I went, man, are they going to back the 49ers off with anything? Are they just going to let the 49ers just play downhill and fly around the field and never have to worry about anything? And, yeah, they did. And then added to that, you know, Ahmed, you go down 7-0. Okay, you get the ball back. You go, you know, you end up punting the ball. You let up a good return. The next drive starts at the 49-yard line. They get 15 yards. They get in field goal position. It's 10-0. Then you go 3-and-out again, and your punter shanks the punt, and now the 49ers got the ball at the 37-yard line. I mean, this is a team that's on fire and running the ball, and you're giving them the ball at the 37-yard line? I mean, this just in, of course they're going to score.
Right. So, yeah, there's a six-play, 37-yard drive. All right, and then you're going, all right, here they are. They're down 17-0. Oh, great, now they have to throw every play against the best pass-rushing defensive line in football. Good luck. And they're just not made to play like that either. And as great as Rodgers is, first off, he's not as great as he was 4 or 5 years ago, where maybe he could have made a few more plays. But there's just not enough help around him as a team. The scheme itself is not creative. The 49ers did nothing on defense. They did the same two defenses they always play. They played cover three, Seattle, press bail, and they played some man-to-man.
Which you can do when you're physically
elite.
More talented than the other
team. Exactly right. And they are. They are elite that way. And then you mess it up in the punt game and give them the short field and start to give them some momentum and everything like that on the road. Yeah, you got no chance. And they really just were overwhelmed altogether on both sides of the football. And, yeah, you know, down 27-0, they finally got a score to make it 27-7. But the 49ers answered right back. I mean, yep. There was never any doubt. And, yeah, you just felt like the 49ers were really in control of this game, really from about the second series on.
I was trying to look at the schedule for the 49ers when they arrived.
Yeah.
I think you were one of the first people that said, this team is for real. I know they had the number two draft pick last year, but they didn't have Jimmy Garoppolo most of the year. And a lot of people thought that. They'd take the next step, but I don't think people thought they'd be this dominant team. And
I did, though. You know that. I did. I'm going to say it.
You thought they were going to be dominant.
Well,
No, not totally. I'm going to call you out a little bit.
Call me out a
little
bit.
Because I do know there was one game.
Yeah.
It was the Monday night game right against Cleveland, the Browns.
Right. Early on.
You picked the Browns.
I did. I picked again. So that was about the time. Goodbye, you.
Week five.
I made the adjustment about right then, maybe a few weeks, 2 weeks later, where I said, 49ers are the best team in football. And then I went through a phase in like week 10, 12, 11, when they got close to Baltimore and playing them. I went, I think Baltimore's a little bit better.
Yeah.
But the 49ers are still the best team in the NFC. So you're right. Early on, weeks 1 through 4 and 5, I wasn't quite sure.
But I think that was the moment. I think that Browns game
really
was
about there. I know I said on PFT one day, I go, I'm not picking against the 49ers for the rest of the year. I said the 49ers are real. There's nothing about them that says fake or bullshit. And they're phenomenal on both sides of the ball.
They went to L.A., beat the Rams the next week.
Exactly.
Moved to 5-0.
Right.
And then it was on.
Then it was on. Yes.
Because at first it was like, okay, you got these wins against.
It was Pittsburgh without Ben Roethlisberger.
Right.
It was, to your point, the Cleveland Browns, who were still a dumpster fire at that point. They played the Bengals and the Buccaneers. So we were like, I didn't know where they were. But they obviously are one of the best teams. And, man, my man Kyle Shanahan, first father-son duo to go to the Super Bowl, really special. And
it's
going to be a great matchup.
It too. I mean, you've seen firsthand what he's gone through and the different stops that he's made. And there are people that say, you know, it's like, oh, he's got a dad who was in it, and so he's got opportunities that other people maybe wouldn't have had.
Sure.
And experiences that other people wouldn't have.
Sure.
But you have to take those opportunities and experiences and grow with them and do things that you did not learn from your father. Or you have to come up with new things. And Kyle, it appears, has been able to do that.
Definitely. And no doubt about it. I mean, if it was that easy, then why is he the first son to be coaching the Super Bowl like his dad did? You know, it's not that easy. Yes, he got the opportunity to have the dad to make the call, to get him into the league and have that connection, right, to get him in the coaching cycle and all that. I was in Tampa when I remember John Gruden walking into the quarterback room right after my rookie year and being like, hey, Mike Shanahan just called me. He said, there's nobody I'd rather my son work for right now than me. And I said, okay, he got the job. So he came down as our quality control guy. And yes, from that point on and before that, I knew his goal was to be where he's at now. And I knew he would get very close to reaching that goal. He's obsessive. He's smart. He's got guts. He's got creativity. And really, I think if you look back at Kyle Shanahan's resume, I think people would be a lot more surprised with what he did, to your point. Yeah, okay, he was with the Texans, and they had two top five offenses there, but people kind of gave Gary Kubiak the credit.
Sure.
And I know that, like, didn't always sit well with Kyle as the competitor, because he wanted to be like, wait, I'm the offensive coordinator, I'm calling the plays, and yet I'm still not getting credit. He goes to the Washington Redskins, and the same thing's going on, and they have some great years on offense, but people are like, oh, it's Mike Shanahan, right? Mike Shanahan's doing good. You know, he goes to Cleveland and people want to call him a dumpster fire because they weren't, like, explosive that year, but still one of the better running teams in football. But they were a dumpster fire, and there was issues there. And then he went to Atlanta, of course, and proved his worth. And I think people finally started to see it, and they couldn't deny it anymore. They couldn't hate on him anymore. And it's amazing where he is.
I mean, it didn't end well with his final game with Atlanta, and that's still one of my favorite coaching quotes of all time, because when he was being introduced with the 49ers, it was fresh off the devastation of losing the Super Bowl and having that lead and blowing it. And there's some questionable play calls, whether you try to just run the clock out at that point. And they were throwing the ball, and they asked him, they go, in retrospect, would you go back and do anything different? He goes, you know, most people say, you know, no, I would do it the same way. He goes, no, obviously I know it didn't work, so I would do things differently. Yeah. And I love that. He's just an honest guy, and you clearly see he connects with the players.
You see it, right? That's what I was going to say. He's real. I mean, you know, he's more comfortable talking to the players in the locker room than he is on the podium talking to the media.
Yeah.
He's in his element. And to the last thing before we move on from that, you know, again, that was fucking wrong. What people did to Kyle Shanahan with the end of that game in Super Bowl down 20, you know, when they were up 28-3 on the Patriots. That was wrong. Had nothing to do with Kyle Shanahan. Yes, would he like to do something differently? Certainly. But let me just say this. If the roles were reversed, all right, and it was the Patriots who blew a 28-3 lead and had suspect calls down the stretch, we wouldn't be blaming Josh McDaniels. We'd be going, what the fuck is Bill Belichick thinking? What's he thinking? Like, what's the head coach doing over there? Dan Quinn wasn't calling the defense, and he's not calling the offense. What is he doing, eating popcorn? He was allowed to say, hey, Kyle, run the ball here. Hey, Kyle, I want to take time off. He didn't do any of that. So Kyle coached the team the way he coached the team all year long. Yeah. I had an issue with that then. I still got an issue with it because, like, I feel like Atlanta kind of, like, let him, like, sail down that river. Like, here's the shit river. You go on it. We're going to sit here on the bank and wave goodbye to you as you go. Yep, Kyle messed it all up. Bye, Kyle.
Yeah, and he says he would have done things differently, but that doesn't mean that he didn't make a valid decision in the first place. Right. If you know the result and it doesn't work out, of course you're going to say, okay, if that didn't work out and I already know that information, I'm going to do something differently.
Yes, exactly.
But it doesn't mean that throwing the ball there because they think you're going to run, you may be able to catch him off guard.
No, and they played aggressive all year. They were the best offense we've seen in the history of football. So he was just doing what they always did. Was it right? No, okay, yeah, right. It should have worked out different. It could have, but he was doing what he had always done the whole year, and it's the head coach's job to manage those situations. If the head coach isn't managing those situations, then I don't know what he's doing if he's not calling plays, which Dan Quinn was not. So he kind of got off the hook there, and people have blamed Shanahan, and that still bothers me, as you could tell.
Kyle has a chance to do it differently now, Super Bowl 54, and give credit, too, to Jed York, who gave the keys, basically, to Kyle Shanahan.
He did.
Who, when I was in the Bay Area, was not a popular guy.
Yeah.
Because things soured with Harbaugh. And people didn't like that.
Things soured with Harbaugh? I've never heard Harbaugh and sour together.
You're not the biggest Harbaugh fan,
no,
for
not.
Sure. But,
definitely not.
But then moving on to Jim Tom
Sula. Go Ohio State.
Jim Tom Sula was not the best move after that.
No.
Chip Kelly didn't work out. And so it was a disaster there for 3-4 years running. And Jed York was able to give the keys over, make that move. And Kyle Shanahan now has got him back to the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 54. We got to say goodbye to the two teams we
do
lost,
it. Do it. Do
so
it.
We need a little music.
Do
for,
it.
Requiem for a Team. This is Titans and Packers. And then afterwards, we can talk a little Titans and Packers. You've already touched on the Packers and what they need.
Yeah, so. Yeah, we'll hit on it.
Here we go.
Hold on.
This is like Zen right here.
It is.
Kinda?
It does. It relaxes me.
Here lie the Tennessee Titans, a team that fell 2 wins short of being the most unforgettable Super Bowl champion since the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I'm
How
sorry.
How dare you?
Well, I'm sorry.
Taking shots at my old team?
You weren't there, I know. It's
just what like, an asshole you are. I was there the next year.
I know.
I'm semi-part of it.
I had forgotten about that. The only chance the Titans have next year is bringing back Derrick Henry to slice through defenses or Mike Vrabel making the choice to slice off something himself.
Like his mustache?
Don't worry about that. Maybe we won't talk about that next year. It'll be a non-story. Here lie the Green Bay Packers.
Bye, Green Bay.
A team with a quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, who will still be in the Super Bowl selling insurance in commercials. So he'll still be there. So don't feel bad for Aaron.
He'll be there with Mahomes.
He'll be there with Mahomes. You're right. It's a team that Chris Sims called the worst 2-seed in the history of the sport.
Mm.
And a team that ended up taking a pretty good number 2 on the field in Santa Clara. So it's like they lived up to the name there.
They did.
Good and bad for the Green Bay Packers. We say goodbye to them. Good runs. I mean, whenever you make it to the championship game.
It is a special year.
It's a good year.
It is.
I mean, even if the Packers maybe overachieve, that's a good thing, right?
It is. They found ways to win.
They had more wins than we thought they should have had. Well, that's a good thing that they did that. And so let's look at the Tennessee Titans real quick here and moving forward for them. Because they've got some questions now. They've got a quarterback, we think, and Ryan Tannehill, right, for the future.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a free agent. can franchise tag him. But then you also got to worry about Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
And now whose value is as high as maybe any running backs has ever been when they hit the free agent market. Doesn't always work out that way. You might be on the down. He has never been more valuable, and now hitting the free agent market. So they've got to figure out a way to get both of them. You assume they will.
Yes.
But I don't think it's a foregone conclusion, though.
Well, yeah, I think Henry and Tannehill have to be towards the top of the list as far as who they need to re-sign back. I mean, come on. Yeah, you know, you did go to the AFC Championship game to what you just talked about. Mm-hmm. So close. You know, the team is built to run the football with the way they've orchestrated their offensive line. Can they afford a guy like Jack Conklin, who wasn't really living up to a top 10 billing? And then this year, he really came on towards the end of the year especially. So can they find a way to pay him? I don't know if they'll be able to do that. Logan Ryan, that's another one. It's going to depend on what kind of price Logan Ryan's asking for out on the open market.
Yeah.
But either way, I think the point to be made is Henry and Tannehill are musts. They're part of the theme of their football team right now.
And what if Tom Brady says, you know what, I wouldn't mind going and playing for Tennessee with Derrick Henry in that running attack?
Well, I'm just going to sit here and tell you, Tom Brady is not as good as Ryan Tannehill. All right, I know that's really shocking to the world right now, but it's just the truth. All right, that's the way I feel about it from what I've seen. Okay, this team is not far off. They're not. I mean, they're really offensively. The only thing I look at offensively is just go, they got to open it up more. You know, just yesterday was the perfect example. The run game gets slowed down. There's just not enough in the pass game for me to feel comfortable to go, oh, they can win games when they have to play one of the better run-stopping defenses in football, and they'll find a way to drop back and throw some creative ways that way. No, certainly a little bit of a question mark there. So the pass game has to expand, the Rolodex of plays. On the defensive side of the ball, don't think they're far off either. You know, they do some creative things. They got a pretty talented secondary. You know, maybe they try to do too much at times. I don't know. They let up a lot of big plays through the year. I think they played too much man-to-man early on. The biggest thing, I think, more than anything is, you know, yeah, they didn't play as much man-to-man down the front. They played a little more zone down the end of the stretch, which I think helped their defense. But they got to find a pass rusher. That, to me, was the biggest issue for them all year. And that's what happened. It reared its ugly head yesterday. They were unable to get there with four ever. And they didn't want to blitz because they knew, man, Mahomes is pretty good against the blitz, and he'll find the right play or the right throw to make. And I don't think they were willing to risk their guys on an island with Sammy or Tyreek Hill deep down the field. So they thought, let's see if they can make him drive the field. And Mahomes is a master right now, and he can do that.
So they have to find a pass rusher,
yep.
Maybe add a little bit more to the secondary. They also have to find a defensive coordinator. Breaking news.
Dean Pease is out.
Dean Pease retired.
He retired.
Mike Vrabel saying he talked him out of retirement one time, didn't have the heart to try to do it again. So
yep.
Dean Pease is retiring from the Tennessee Titans, their defensive coordinator.
Okay. He's one of the best defensive coordinators we've had in this league the last, you know, 15 or 20 years. He's really creative, really good that way. But they won't miss a lot because Vrabel knows that defense. He played under Dean Pease when Dean Pease was in New England as a defensive coordinator. So they won't lose a lot as far as scheme is concerned.
So before we move on from the Titans, I want to just throw a couple numbers out at you here. Derrick Henry, how much is he going to make? So you got Zeke making $15 million a year. You got Todd Gurley making $14 million a year. People see both of those deals and say, oh, maybe both of those teams would rather not have done that.
Mm-hmm.
Le'Veon, $13 million a year. Maybe the Jets would rather not have done that.
Yep.
David Johnson, $13 million a year. Those are the only players making 13 or more million. Henry made $1.1 million this year.
Yeah.
What does he get? What do you think he gets?
That's certainly going to scare teams. You're right. Those names right there. And then, you know, you're going to be able to look at it and go, well, look at Kyle Shanahan. He's got, like, three running backs, and they're still really awesome.
Right.
So what, do we really have to have a game breaker?
But it seems like Henry single-handedly can take a team.
He can.
And good to potential Super Bowl team.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, agreed. And really, their team, and I think their mantra, their team, and what Mike Vrabel wants as a football team is smash mouth. We want to be out physical you, control the time of possession, you know, and then let our defense – you know, we're very multiple on that side. I mean, that's how they want to play.
So will he get the most money if any running back?
I think he's going to be very close to it. I do. Yeah. I think it's going to be hard to stop him. The thing I would say, too, about Derrick Henry, first off, is he's pretty fresh for a guy this far in his career. The first 2 years, they didn't really overuse him.
Yeah.
So it's really just been the last 2 years where they've really kind of got
on
the
last 2 years in the second half of the year,
too, right. And I will say this, I don't see him he's pretty good at taking care of his body as a runner. He doesn't take a lot of huge car crash type hits. You know, he finds ways to not let people hit him square and, you know, oh, just the shoulder on the side or whatever. Yeah, I went down, but he doesn't let you just square him up and crush him that way. But, hey, Ezekiel Elliott's contract and Gurley's would scare me. And, of course, Le'Veon Bell's. They would all scare me. They would. I mean, Ezekiel Elliott's right now, just the way I look at it, it's a mistake. It is a mistake right now. And I know I was the guy that was banging the table for them to make him the highest paid running back.
You got to pay some big bucks to play the game, though.
Yeah.
Derrick Henry, the best in the game right now at the running back position. And one more thing I throw at you.
Yeah.
Bruce Arians over there in Tampa.
Right.
Says, you know what? I just heard what Chris Sims said about Ryan Tannehill. And I'm not sold on my guy. And the Chargers say, oh, I heard what Chris Sims said about Ryan Tannehill. There are other teams out there that
sure.
would love to make a offer to Ryan Tannehill.
Yes.
That may be more. You're just talking about 15,
maybe.
$14 million per year for Derrick Henry. Who knows? I mean, there are quarterbacks available. There are other teams that need quarterbacks. That's. I don't think that's as much of a foregone conclusion as we think.
No. Okay. I'm not. I agree with what you're
saying.
You
could franchise them, I guess, for 1 year.
You could franchise them. The other thing they could do here, and depending on their situation, their salary, I mean, they could find a way to sign him up here before the next league year even starts, right? So that would be one way they would avoid it. But two things. That would be a way to avoid it, okay, to get that before he hits the free agent market and can figure out what another team might want to be. The other thing, too, you got to take into account is he's built something there, too. So he does want to stay.
Yeah.
So, like, if the Chargers only offer – if the Chargers – let's just say they did want him to be the starting quarterback. If they only offered him, like, $2 or $3 million or more per year or whatever, you don't go. You've built something. You've built somewhat of a culture. The team believes in you. The city believes in you. The style of play fits how you play. You did good things. Do you really want to risk it and go somewhere else and start over with, oh, man, I don't know, the Chargers, this coaching staff might be in their last year. If they don't perform well, who knows what happens to this team? You know, so you got to remember that, too. He's going to want to stay in Tennessee and try to finish something that they kind of built this year.
He said that after the game. He said, quote, I'll have to take a step back and look at things here in the offseason, but obviously I love this team.
Yeah.
So he's talking very glowingly. And why wouldn't he about a team that he was one win away from taking to the Super Bowl? And over on the Packers, real quick, you touched on it, what they need. They need someone outside of Davante Adams.
Got to.
More of a burner down the field,
right,
than a possession receiver that Davante Adams is.
Right.
They have key free agents in their linebacker, Blake Martinez, Brian Bulaga, Mason Crosby, their kicker. So there are some pieces there, but for the most part, it seems like the Packers are intact and moving in a direction you think that Aaron Rodgers says he thinks they're in a window.
I do.
Here. So he thinks that he, with Matt LaFleur, can win a couple. He said, I hope to win a couple Super Bowls with him.
Yeah. No, I think they are in the window. I don't think he's wrong there. You know, I think a few players here and there, and they're a team that I go, whoa, watch out for. I mean, first off, just like the Tennessee Titans, I would like to say this holds true. And, you know, actually, the head coach for the Green Bay Packers, you know where he came from? The Tennessee Titans. So it's a similar thing here. They have to grow their passing offense. It's just too simple. It really is. I used to say this about Mike McCarthy, too. Now, Mike McCarthy didn't always run the ball like a LaFleur does. LaFleur has brought more to the table in their run game, and I think that's what makes me feel a little bit better about their offense. But what we saw in games this year, too, where they couldn't run the ball, they just can't consistently throw the ball between the scheme being somewhat simple and then really only having Davante Adams as the only go-to guy in the pass game. There's nobody else. You know, Jimmy Graham is not Jimmy Graham that we know from back in the Saints. You know, the other receivers are all kind of unproven and spotty. They need to get another difference maker on the outside. You know, the offensive line, they're in pretty good spot. Yeah, what they do with Bulaga, I don't know how they feel about the backups. I'm not sure. But for the most part, that's pretty talented. The biggest thing for sure is interior defensive linemen, 100%.
They got the ends covered.
They got the ends covered. They got the secondary covered. They got a great secondary. There's a lot of the like there. I mean, you saw. I mean, the 49ers said, you know what? We're not even really going to mess with the secondary. We see another weakness, and we're going to, like, play that hand first until you prove to us you could stop that down, and then we'll mess with, you know, Kevin King and Jair Alexander and Adrian Amos and Savage and company. There's some talent there. But, yes, you know, Kenny Clark is a good player. He's not a superstar to me. He's just real good. And then the other guys that got around him, you know, there's not enough. I'm just, you know, Lancaster, Lowry, they're the guys you want coming off the bench for your second squad. You want them as your backup D tackles. You don't want them as your starters. And they were compromised there. And then, you know, Blake Martinez, he does a really good – he's a good athlete. He's smart. But do they want to play that kind of style with a middle linebacker? You know,
you know.
Are you just saying he's smart because he went to Stanford?
Well, I know that too. I remember covering him there, and he is a good athlete. He's good in the pass game. He's good sideline to sideline. He's not a thumper though. Does Mike Pettine want that? Mike Pettine comes from Rex Ryan, New York Jets. DeMario Davis is our middle linebacker. Harris, like, they believe in, like, oh, downhill, I could take on a pulling guard ball and throw him off me and make a tackle. That's not what Martinez is either. So they lose size and physicality in the interior of their defense, and it compromised them all year. They always had to try to hide that to be manageable, and they finally found the right team that, you know, kind of exposed them that way.
Mason Crosby, 13-year NFL career, all with the Packers.
He'll be back.
Made 92% of his field goals this year, his best percentage ever. A kicker that can kick in Green Bay.
No doubt.
So valuable.
He's been so clutch other than last year, right? That was the only year.
A little bit of a blip
last year. Other than that, he's been one of the best kickers in the sport.
You want to take a quick look?
Let's do it.
Early look at the Super Bowl. So we got our speed round, but first... So, you know, we're not the only people that use this area.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yeah.
I kind of thought it was your only area.
Well, it's my area, and I rent it out to people.
So the two Robbies also do the podcast, do great work with the Premier League. I work with them from time to time.
Right.
On a random Monday here and there where everyone goes, why is Rebecca not here? Who is that other guy that's got darker skin? I don't like him as much. So here the two Robbies were doing their podcast. Here's what they had to say not long ago.
The marquee match of the weekend, my friend, Liverpool versus Man United.
1 minute, mate. Oh. Just for our YouTube followers, this desk, by the way.
I know, it's Mickey Mouse, mate.
We had a special desk, two Robbie's desks, nice bits and pieces on it, and I'm told Chris Sims is taking it away for Super Bowl.
Yeah, Super Bowl coverage is taking our desk away. What's more important, the Super Bowl or discussing
the Premier League? Premier League title of Liverpool, 30 years away. Chris Sims, we're coming for you. We want it back.
The two Robbies are coming for you. Not one Robbie, there's two Robbies.
There's two Robbies. One of them's not talking in the mic, okay? So I don't know if that mic's working. All right, I just want to make sure.
We'll check it. We'll check that. It is true. So we've had, I don't know if people know this, but we've had 13 desks since we started this podcast
right.
of different sizes. This is not the latest one.
No.
Because
we have a real
good
desk.
One now.
Yes,
we have one forever.
We do.
Right? It's
we
like
do.
A forever desk.
Yes.
But so that's going to Miami.
It's going to Miami. We got shows to do.
Which I had the question, like, do they not have desks in Miami? Did we really have to ship the desk to Miami? But I guess it's authenticity, right?
It is.
You want to keep continuity.
That's right.
You're not shipping me to Miami, but the desk.
The desk. Well, I mean, hey, you got to pick what's more important, and that was a tough one. But we took the desk, okay? And you know, the two Robbies, I love them. You're allowed to rent my desk anytime, but it's my desk. Don't get that messed up, okay? It's mine, and it'll be back right after the Super Bowl. Don't worry, because yes, this desk we're on right now. Like to take a quote from them. It is Mickey Mouse.
It is a little Mickey Mouse.
It is
right?
a little Mickey Mouse, yeah, definitely.
We've had some ups and downs in this. You can see both of our legs, although that's good for you, the shoe guy.
Yeah,
you can
no.
see both of
my
your shoes.
My shoes don't look as
desk.
Cool on TV as they do in person. Damn.
Super Bowl Live.
Live.
54.
Live is like a, isn't that a club in Miami?
Ooh, L-I-F?
I think
it's L-I-V.
Not,
no,
not F. L-I-V.
L-I-V.
Liff.
L-I-E-F.
Super Bowl
is
right?
Super Bowl 54.
Yep. See, somebody's telling me back here, and he says it is. Yes.
It is. You're right. Okay,
yep.
So there you go.
Yep.
It's congruent. So the speed round time for Super Bowl Live. You got opening odds, Kansas City -1, over under 53.5. I just want gut reactions here. Don't go deep into it because you're going to be doing that for the next 2 weeks straight. And you're going to be sick of it. But your first reaction to Kansas City being favored and the over under being 53.5.
I'm surprised the most that Kansas City's favored.
I am too.
I mean, the 49ers to me are the better team. Now, the thing that's scary is the best player on the field is going to be in the red jersey with the yellow trim.
The quarterback.
Wearing number 15.
Yes.
Right. I mean, so that is an equalizer. But I was surprised to see. I think I would have favored, 49ers by 1.5 or something like that.
Over under, I have no idea.
Over under is going to be, that's a good number, right? That's a pretty good number. I mean,
it's a high one. Pete's telling me it's a high over under.
Yeah. I don't know. For these two teams, they're explosive. You know, I mean, you can certainly see a 27-24 game, which would be dancing around it, right? 28-24, 31-28, all those are going to surpass, or that last one's going to surpass it. So it's a right roundabout. It's pretty close.
So I'm going to get a pick. Not in the game.
Yeah.
Coin.
Oh.
Coin toss. Heads or tails?
Well, it's going to be tails.
I'm always a tails guy
as well. Yeah, it never fails, really. That's kind of how I go.
It does, though.
It does fail.
50%
of the time, yeah.
But I'm a big tails guy, too.
Tua!
Oh, my gosh. What's happening here? Don't get...
Tua!
God bless me.
Do we have to bleep those out like we do the
I don't think so.
Swear words?
I'll swear next time I sneeze at the same time.
We take that, what your sneeze, and we put that over you whenever you swear now.
Okay.
That's the new beat.
I like that.
So here we go. So which uniforms should the 49ers wear? So here's the story.
Yes.
So they want to wear the white ones, the throwback white ones from 1994. If you're watching on YouTube, they've done it twice this year, which is already an exception from the NFL. They only normally let you wear the throwbacks one time in the year, but then the 49ers said, can we do it week 17 against the Seattle Seahawks? We think it would be cool. And the NFL said, fine, okay, it's cool. Will they let them do it again? I don't know. The league has not always been known. Now, we are looking at what their normal away jerseys are, the whites and the throwbacks. And I must say, the throwbacks look way better.
Yeah, the throwbacks are special. I mean, they really are. I can see why the team wants to wear them. And, I mean, yeah, they're cool. 1994, that was one of the best 49er teams ever. Mm-hmm. That's the uniform they wore. But, Will, I don't know. You know, I know Mike Florio made the point, like, oh, well, they want to sell the jerseys with the patch on them, and they might not have these throwback jerseys. Right? Maybe they don't. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe these jerseys are not ready to be sold max quantity for the people that are down there in South Beach to say, oh, I'm wearing a Super Bowl jersey, and then they come out in another jersey. I think that's probably the issue. I think Mike's probably right about that one.
Wait, do we have breaking news here, Pete?
Are they allowed?
Oh, rumors are is that the NFL will not allow throwback uniforms. But you're right. It might be more of a production issue.
I would think
Which to that I say you're a multi-billion dollar company. Figure it out. But, okay.
It's
not my call.
No, it's not your call.
And it's probably a huge headache. And they're just like, just wear the other ones. Fine. Just wear the other ones and no one will notice. Will we see Andy Reid in a Hawaiian shirt at any point over the next 2 weeks?
Of course. Of course. I say at least 2 to 3 times next week in Miami. I mean, the guy has personally told me he's got a closet full of these. They send them to him for free. He's going to be the greatest walking billboard in Tommy Bahama history next week.
I mean,
so he's going to get a new shipment at his hotel in Miami. Guarantee it.
Could not be farther from
Hawaii. Here's more
Hawaii.
Drapes for you to wear, Mr. Reid.
It's just like how many thousands of miles from Hawaii to Miami. But, yeah, he'll be sporting that. And he did say he does need to lose some weight before he gets down to Miami.
Right.
And do you know how he celebrated the win yesterday? Did you hear that quote?
No.
He said, I had a cheeseburger and went to bed.
Ooh.
So it doesn't seem like
cheeseburger sounds good.
Losing it. It does.
He's got work
really
to do,
good.
Though. Got work to do.
Best MVP bet other than Mahomes. So throwing out Mahomes, who's your best bet to win the Super Bowl MVP?
My mind
is Mahomes.
Yeah.
But then you got Garoppolo second because they're quarterbacks.
Yeah.
How about them? Raheem Mostert.
Yep, that's the guy that first came to my mind.
Oh, George Kittle, 14-1.
And that's the second guy.
I like those odds for George Kittle.
Agreed.
There's a little rumbling that if Lamar Jackson didn't have the year he had, there might be no player that's more valuable to a team than George Kittle, what he can do in the pass game and the run blocking game. But
he's awesome. My mind went to Mostert and Kittle. More than anything, yeah. Nick Bosa, if he has an incredible day where he ends up getting 3 sacks, the way Mahomes kind of holds the ball, if they're in big moments, he could. I mean, Tyreek Hill certainly could too. If Mahomes had a day where, like, let's just say yesterday, right, where you threw for, what did he end up throwing
294.
For? 297 or whatever. All right, so 294 and 3 touchdowns.
With one more rushing
touchdown. If he has 294 and 3 touchdowns and, like, 190 of those and all 3 touchdowns with the Tyreek Hill, who becomes the MVP of the game? I don't know. Probably Mahomes still, because we're in this quarterback era where we always give him credit, but that would be interesting.
Probably.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would go Mahomes, Mostert, then Kittle. That would be my top 3.
Okay, I would go Kittle. I'd put all my money on Kittle.
Mahomes,
14
Kittle.
14-1. I like those
odds. Who's your third? Who's after Kittle?
I like Nick Bosa.
Okay.
And I would go.
I just asked for 3. Thank you.
I had Mahomes.
Thank you.
Man,
we know Mahomes. We know Mahomes is 1.
Okay,
we know that.
Okay, fine. Finally, most important defender in the game. Who is the most important defender? Not necessarily the most impactful or who will have the biggest game, but who is the most important defender for their team in the Super Bowl?
Mm.
That's a real...
You know, it's a tough one. Well, because right away I think about, okay, Bosa and D Ford, their ability to contain and tackle Mahomes is important, but I think the biggest one is going to be Chris Jones.
Mm.
Chris Jones, the health of his calf, can he be 100% for Super Bowl Sunday? And Chris Jones, because... Hey, listen, as awesome as everybody is, even the 49ers too, I think Chris Jones is the best defensive lineman in this game. I do. And it'll be imperative for him to be healthy and disruptive to slow down all the creative run plays we saw and do those things. He can be that guy to go, oh, okay, yeah, this is a great run play, but I'm just going to throw my guy out of the way, and now your running back's going to have to go in another direction, and it's not such a great run play. And that's what he did yesterday in that little moment I talked about when they were up 17, when they were down 17-14. He just throws people off. He's unbelievable, let alone he's the second-best interior pass rusher in football. He's the only guy that's better than him is Aaron Donald. Other than that, as far as D-tackles are concerned, he's the most disruptive pass rusher in the game.
I'm looking forward to seeing Dee Ford. I think he is important because he knows what Kansas City does.
Sure.
He was traded for a second-round pick last year to the 49ers. Do you know who the Chiefs selected with that second-round pick that they got for trading Dee Ford to San Francisco?
Mecole Hardman?
Yeah, that was it.
That's it. Yep, that was a good one. He was one of my pre-draft love affairs.
For both teams.
I had a crush on him.
That worked out really well for
both. Man crush. It did work out really well for both teams.
You don't still have a man crush on Mecole Hardman?
I do. I still have him. But he was one of my draft man crushes where I was like, I don't know why this guy's not getting talked about more in the first two rounds type of thing. He was on my, you know, Robin Hood, like, list a lot. Whoa, my mic thing
and
just
fell. And he went to the perfect offense.
Perfect offense. Perfect offense.
Perfect
no doubt about
it. Andy Reid. Okay, that's it.
That's it. All right, I got one more read because we got that live podcast next Wednesday, January 29th, in South Beach at Playwright Irish Pub, all right? Playwright Irish Pub in South Beach next Wednesday, January 29th, 5 to 7, will be a joint collaboration podcast. Chris Sims Unbuttoned and PFT PM with Mike Florio. Free to attend. One free drink on Florio per person. Okay.
In an hour, it went from unlimited drinks.
I didn't know Florio was so cheap. I'm sorry. All right. I don't know. Maybe, you know, I don't know. Listen, it was depend on the crowd there. Maybe I'll spring for everybody to have a free second one. I don't know. I can be that nice. Okay. But we would love that. We want a live audience. We want to do some interaction. We're going to have some fun. We're going to break down the game. And we are going to have some special guests to come along too and be a part of the show. So check it out, all right? You can claim a ticket on Eventbrite. The link will be posted on at Pro Football Talk or at CSimsQB on Twitter, either one of those. Check it out. Please come join us. We'll have some fun. I'm going to talk some shit to you guys and hopefully teach some football. And Ahmed will not be there, so you don't have to worry about seeing him.
You don't know that. You don't know that.
You're not invited.
I'm not invited, but that doesn't mean I won't.
Annie will be there, though. Annie will be there.
Everyone
I
will
invited
be there
Andy.
Me. That's okay. Yep. Have a fun time.
All right, fine. Are you coming on Wednesday? Am I talking to you this Wednesday? Are you on the podcast?
I will not
be
here, no.
You're not? Okay, so I'm not going to see you for a while.
Wow. Have fun at the Super Bowl.
I'll miss you.
I'm going to miss you, too.
Watch a movie.
I'll watch
the Oscars
movie.
Are coming. I watched some movies. You got to watch them.
Okay, I'll watch
them. Okay, all right, whatever. He's not going to watch them. All right, peace out, everybody. Check us out Wednesday. I'll have the big fucker on here. We're going to break down some more games, film, plays, all that good stuff. Everybody have a good week. See ya.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.